If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The most interesting thing about you as an entrepreneur, as a personal brand, as an artist, or a creator, is how you became the person that you are. That is your origin story. And that is exactly what my guest today specializes in. What's up, storytellers? Welcome back to the Storytelling Lab, Season 11, Moving Strong. This is episode 146, and today my guest is Robert Tighe. Robert Tighe is an Irishman in New Zealand who has a background in journalism. Now, that's not so unique to the Storytelling Lab because a lot of great storytellers come from the world of journalism. Makes a lot of sense, right? But here's what's unique about Robert's journey, which I particularly really, really like, is he comes from the world of sports, of athletics, and he worked for Red Bull for a long time, and I sold my first feature film to Red Bull Media House. So we had a lot of things in common. I come from the world of sports too. So I was really excited to dive in to his journey, to his story, to understand how he helps people like you tell your story. The first thing that we identified was athletes and entrepreneurs are very similar in their chemical makeup. They are big, bold risk takers, right? They usually have a massive amount of belief in what they can do, and they are driven to excel, and they are self-motivated, and they are disciplined, and sometimes they struggle with the same things as well. And so he spent the whole first part of his career helping athletes tell their story better, and it naturally transitioned when he started serving entrepreneurs. Robert talks about how if you understand your origin story clearly, then you understand your why, your purpose, and it informs everything that you do from there on out. And you can communicate that clearly to people too. Here's where I come from. So here is who I serve and why. The most important part, the why, right? We talk about how everything is a remix and understanding how you can remix something so we can see your unique take on it, can separate you and differentiate you from your crowd, from others in your industry. We talk about how you can't necessarily read the ingredients on the label when you're inside the jar, talking about being too close to your story and needing the help of someone like Robert, a ghostwriter who helps people reveal and unearth their origin stories in a way that clearly paints the picture of their why, of their purpose, so that those they might help can clearly understand if they are the right people for them or not. And my favorite thing that he said, and this is at the end of the conversation, was his goal is to help people create substantial pieces of art, of content. That's why he works on books, you know? Now, I met him on LinkedIn, so we talked about how, you know, a lot of the stories that we tell are short-lived and tweets that just kind of go off into the universe and we never hear from them again. I really, really respect him as an artist to put his sole focus on helping people create big, substantial pieces of content, books. Books is his specialty, but it's not just books for those out there listening. Books, films, in my world, albums, even companies, right? Something that will last. Starting from your origin story and building something that will last forever. Here is my conversation with Robert Tighe, and I hope that you love it.
Welcome to the Storytelling Lab, where we break down how to get to the heart of your story and the hearts of your audience to leave the greatest impact possible. And now, here's your host, award-winning filmmaker and writer, Rain Bennett.
What's up, my beautiful people? Welcome to another episode of the Storytelling Lab, where we help you break down the art and science of storytelling. My name is Rain Bennett. I am your host, and my job is to help you deepen your connections, increase your sales, and serve your audiences better. Every Tuesday morning, I send out a quick storytelling tip to my newsletter subscribers. I show you techniques I've learned along my journey and used in my own stories, as well as those of my clients. But most importantly, I leave you with tangible takeaways that you can apply to your brand storytelling immediately. Oh, well, actually, more importantly than that, it's free. If this would help you, sign up for the newsletter at rainbennett.com/weekly-storytelling-tips. Welcome, Robert, to the show.
Hey, Rain. Good to see you. Good to meet you.
Absolutely. I know it, you know, it's really interesting. We were talking before about, you know, LinkedIn land. It's always interesting to cultivate relationships with people that make you feel like you've been friends for a long time. And then you're like, oh, here's your face. And then if we were to ever meet, if we are so fortunate to meet in person, then that's a whole nother level of like, wait, I've never actually seen you. But it's like, I think it's a really good thing, but it is strange in the time that we're in, because you can feel so close to someone. So you and I have been chatting for a while, but we are indeed meeting for the first time in this moment.
Yeah, I think we know a lot of the same people, and I think there's a really nice community of storytellers on LinkedIn. And it's just a really good bunch of people, I think, who are all kind of very, very much on the same page, excuse the pun, about the kind of the value of storytelling and how it can impact people, right?
Absolutely. And I have really leaned into LinkedIn specifically this year. I didn't spend much time. I always had a presence there, but I didn't really spend much time there until this year. And have really felt embraced by that community and really have felt fulfilled by those like yourself that I have made connections with. It's a very strong and growing and prominent community, we'll say there. So that's a good point, I think, to start off with. I have a two-part question from that. Is one, how important is it to cultivate that sort of community when it comes to terms of you know, in our world, storytelling, but any type of content creation or art form? How important is it to have those people to share with, to learn from, to even, you know, teach in some capacities? How important is it to our creations, our art, to have that sort of supportive community?
One of the things I love about LinkedIn for me is that it allows you to work through your ideas in a very public forum and get feedback on your ideas. And certainly for me, my whole business model really evolved from posting on LinkedIn and the feedback I got from kind of people in my network around stuff I was posting about storytelling and telling my own stories. I came to LinkedIn about four or five years ago, maybe, and I had no real presence on social media previous to that. And LinkedIn is about the only platform that I play on, to be honest with you, because I've just found that it works for me. And the reason it works, I think, is that the community tends to be really engaged. The comments are respectful. They're tend to be intelligent, very well informed, very well intentioned. You know, there's not too many dickheads, I think, on LinkedIn, which is a good thing, right? And certainly for me, as I said, like I came to storytelling for business leaders from a journalism background, and as I said, I kind of figured out my business model by posting on LinkedIn, by kind of working through my ideas and getting feedback on them. So for me, it's invaluable, no matter what kind of space you're in. The power of getting feedback on your content, on your stories, on your ideas, mm-hmm. is a huge part of LinkedIn for me.
So let's flip that. The second part of that question is, and we alluded to this when we were chatting just earlier, how important is it, or how do you go about it, perhaps is the question, to make sure that you are not just a carbon copy, to carve out your lane in this niche space of storytelling specifically for us, but this applies to anybody, any vertical or any community that someone's part of, because I think that's a trap that can happen when you're part of a community where there's a lot of people in a space talking about it. How do you approach, how do you suggest someone approaches being able to differentiate yourself in that space?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. And you're seeing a lot of people, I think, now selling hooks and templates and courses for how to tell better stories on LinkedIn. And I would advise people, please, 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 you know, just be careful with those hooks and those templates, because it can become, as you say, carbon copies of other people's posts. And if you're on LinkedIn a bit, you can tell very quickly, you know, if somebody's lifted kind of an introduction or a hook or a template from somewhere else. For me, and I'm biased because my whole kind of thing is about personal stories and what I call origin stories. So for me, wrapping up what might be an old business point or what might be a very well-known kind of tenant or rule or something in your industry that's very well known, wrapping that up in a personal story and putting your own personal spin on it is just a great way for you to stand out and for people to, I suppose, get your idea or get that old idea in a different way and appreciate that it's coming from you. You're putting your own perspective on it. You're putting a new fresh lens on it. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is your hook or your intro can be that personal kind of story. And from there, segue into the business point that you're trying to make. That's one of the things that I really emphasize with the clients I work with, that mm-hmm. it's not just telling stories for the sake of telling stories. What you want to try and do is wrap a personal story around a business point that kind of just embellishes that and heightens that business point that you're trying to make.
Well, this is what I think is so overlooked in that effort, is that that's the only thing that we uniquely possess, right? Is our lived experiences and our story. And when people overlook that or neglect that, I think you're missing the opportunity to leverage, you know, its significant power. Like, I could never have your approach to it if you do it right, because I don't have your approach to it. I don't have your journey to landing where you landed, even if we have the same philosophy. So I think people miss that so often when, you know, it becomes kind of rat racy, or you're trying to find best practices and steal from, you know, clues from successful people, which is okay to do. But if you do it without, or with skipping that part about putting yourself into it, I don't have any idea how to differentiate you from someone else. And I think... Yeah. We don't leverage that enough, because no one can ever have your path to get to where you got to, even if you land at the same point. And so I think that's a really smart approach for you and the work that you do for your clients. Now,
it's not just taking your own journey. It's taking what interests you, you know, things that you like from pop culture or your hobbies or whatever. It's taking all those things and putting them into the mix. Because let's face it, there's very little new out there in terms of business ideas or storytelling ideas. You know, it's a lot of it has been said before. I watched this great YouTube video by a guy called Mark Ronson. I don't know if you know Mark Ronson. He's a music producer from the UK. Yeah. Great video on YouTube where he says everything is a remix. You know, and it's true. Everything is, great clip about, you know, that we're all building on what other people have said or the music that other people have made before. But what makes your creative output different is those influences. You know, as you said, your journey, your hobbies, what you're interested in. Throw them all into the mix, but and see what comes out. You know, it's fascinating to me to see the different spin that people can put on things. And if you don't do that, you're just rehashing what other people have said, right?
Absolutely. That's such a great point. It's not just your experiences, but your passions, what you're passionate about too, because, this is going to set us up exactly where I wanted to take us, because there's something that excites me about your passion and your history and experience specifically. If your side passion is basketball, it's okay for you to use stories of Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan to illustrate your point, because you'll do that so much more passionately than someone else might who doesn't know the game or doesn't, know the nuances of whatever other passion that you have. I think I'm really glad you pointed that out, because that's an even easier one for people to overlook when they think about, like, okay, this is my journey, my story. Often they don't think about, but who I am is part of my story too. Like, I grew up playing basketball, so I still love basketball as a 40-year-old man. Yeah. That segues perfectly into where I wanted to go next, because you uniquely have a history and a background in sports. And I kind of came from that as well. The first, I grew up an athlete, so I've always been passionate about sports. And even some of the first film projects that I was doing when I was just a baby filmmaker was, I did wedding videos and I did sports recruiting videos for like high school kids wanting to go to university, and they would make highlight reels. And I loved that. Fast forward, 10 years or so, my first feature documentary was a sports documentary, which, by the way, we sold to Red Bull Media House.
Oh,
right. So I saw your background there. And so I want to spend some time there, because I think I would be remiss, not to, So let's establish a little bit about what you did at that time in your career specifically. Were you working with athletes? Were you working with teams? Were you working with brands? What's your background that kind of led to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I grew up like a lot of, I suppose, young kids dreaming of playing sport for a living. Played everything. And I was around 12 or 13 when I kind of slowly started to realize that I wasn't the best player on my street, let alone, good enough to play any sport professionally. But I thought I could write about sport instead. That idea kind of was planted in my head around that age. My father was a great newspaper man. He was a farmer, but he loved newspapers. So our house was full of newspapers. So I read the sports pages cover to cover from like a really young age. And then when I was 13, my mother gave me a typewriter. I was like, what are you giving me a typewriter for? She just left it in my room one day, and it was just a little nudge. I think she recognized something in me that I didn't, that that maybe my love for reading, my love for words could potentially lead somewhere, and her hunch was right, because I taught myself to touch type on the typewriter. I got a summer job at my local newspaper. I was the editor of the school magazine, the sports editor of the school magazine, mainly because it gave me a half day to go and watch the sports teams go and play. So that was a huge part of it. And I had my heart set on becoming a writer or a journalist. And then I got a bit sidetracked in my 20s, as a lot of us do. Went to university, cigarettes and alcohol and all that.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, all of that came into play. And I put it off for about 10 years until it was just nagging at me. There was this kind of, this my gut feeling was, man, you should be writing. What are you doing? Like, I was working in recruitment. I was working in sales. I was working in advertising, different jobs. And finally, in my late 20s, I found the guts to quit my job as a recruitment consultant. I went back to my hometown and I begged the editor of the local paper to give me a shot at being a sports reporter, even though I had no experience, I had no qualifications, I didn't study for it. But I could touch type, and I knew an awful lot about sports, and thankfully he gave me a shot, and that was 20 odd years ago, and I'm still writing. And so I started out with a small town paper in Ireland, met a New Zealand woman, moved to the other side of the world, to New Zealand, where I started from the bottom, and I started working with the local newspaper over here, and then I started freelancing, and that led to a gig with Red Bull. Red Bull were launching a magazine in New Zealand. Somehow they found me online from the work I was doing, and they reached out to me and said, would you be interested in writing the first feature story for this new magazine? And that led it to the editor's job, and it was just an incredible 5 years working with Red Bull, because, as you know, with Red Bull, they've built a brand on storytelling, and they're masters at it, right?
Absolutely. I just want to pause right there. It's, so often in our journeys, we have these moments where it's like kind of what you just said, where it's like, I'm not sure how they even found me. And I love those moments because they don't happen if you don't take that leap and, you know, leave your job and go do that first job, right? They're products of that. But there's always those moments where it's just like, yeah, Red Bull family. You're like, well, yeah, because you had stuff out there to find, right? And those are those moments where the work starts to pay off. It's hard to connect the dots of how it exactly happened, but they're always there. And I've had other people say similar things like, yeah, I'm not even sure how I got that job. But it's like, I just love that because it doesn't happen without that leap that you took a few years prior.
Yeah. I love that point you make as well about connecting the dots because leading up to journalism, right? You know, I used to beat myself up about the last years in my 20s. I used to think, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing with your life? But when I sat down recently to write my own origin story and reflected on those years in my 20s, like pretty much every job I had, I learned something that came in really, really handy in journalism. Because in recruitment, I was interviewing people. I was sitting across from senior business leaders day in and day out, and I was interviewing them. You know, I had to pick up the phone and make cold calls. I was doing all these things that were just, you know, better than going to a journalism college or, you know, doing a journalism course. I was getting real world experience in how to talk to people. And that's the value of kind of reflecting on that journey and joining the dots. Because I think if I hadn't done that a few years ago, I probably would still be beating myself up about my 20s, right?
Buddy, I can empathize with that beating yourself up part very, very much so, very deeply. Following that thread, what are some of the things that you uniquely learn from working with, I'll say athletes, but people in the sports world, because that could include like race car drivers, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I don't know if we are, you know, people's definition of athlete changes. But what I have found is often, this is an assumption or an estimation, but often athletes aren't necessarily the best storytellers, or sometimes their personalities, but sometimes they're really shy when it comes to opening up and telling their story, unless they go through some sort of media training. So the question is, what did you uniquely learn from that approach to storytelling and how to work with people? Because I think that's could be a tough nut to crack, you know, a footballer or something like that, that's very stoic and just focused on, you know, on their body and performance and really don't reflect back on like, hey, how did you become the person that you are? How do you work with someone like that to unveil, to reveal the deeper parts of their story if they're not quite able to do that themselves?
That's a really, really good question. It was hard. It was hard initially, especially with team sports. I found trying to talk to players from team sports is a really tough gig because either one, they're really, really shy about their story and they're not confident in themselves. Either two, they've been media trained, which can be a terrible thing. And so they're media trained to death. And three, quite often, they all have the same story, right? They're exceptionally good at what they do. They go to an academy and they come out the other side as this fully formed professional player. So they don't really have a story. For me, when I was doing team sports, I really, really enjoyed chatting to the coaches because the coaches had the stories. Generally, the coaches had great stories to tell. And they were a bit more reflective, I guess, on the journey they'd been on. And they knew how to tell a story better. I was so lucky with Red Bull, the 5 years I spent with Red Bull, because the types of people I worked with at Red Bull, the extreme athletes, obviously, that everybody knows Red Bull for, but also I kind of free reign to talk to musicians and artists and entrepreneurs. Essentially, my remit was to find stories in New Zealand and Australia of exceptional people doing exceptional things. So it was just a blank canvas. And the extreme athletes, the sponsored athletes from Red Bull in particular, were the complete opposite to the guys playing team sports because they were kind of lone rangers. They were mavericks out there doing, you know, triple backflips on a BMX or whatever it might be. And they had a real passion for what they did. You know, that's not something you do unless you're totally consumed by it, totally driven by it. And as well as that, I think the stereotypical image you might have of a Red Bull athlete is a bit, you know, off the wall, a bit crazy. But for me, the people that I interviewed, they were actually the opposite of that. They were really measured. They knew that what they were doing was high risk. So they actually had to kind of consider every kind of step of what they were doing. And they were very measured and considered about their career as well, because they were, you know, essentially marketing themselves. So they had to have a good story. And they were, you know, I found them really, really great interviews. You know, there was just some really cool guys that I interviewed at Red Bull.
This the film that I did, it was called Raise Up, The World Is Our Gym, that I sold to Red Bull, was about extreme calisthenics, the people doing pull-ups on streetlights and scaffolding and jumping from bar to bar. And that culture had really grown. But it's exactly what you're talking about. They would do it in communities, but it wasn't a team sport. And yeah, every one of them had stories to tell. Exactly what you described. I was like picturing that movie. It's like, yeah, every person I interviewed across the world had a good story of how they got there and how it changed their lives. And they, but yet they were also calculated because they were flipping from bar to bar, you know, 8 feet in the air. It was dangerous. That definitely tracks. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. And it was actually through the Red Bull stuff that it kind of led directly to what I'm doing now, working with business owners and entrepreneurs. I was unlucky enough that Red Bull folded after about 5 years in New Zealand. There was just a Red Bull Media House in Austria published 12 issues of this magazine around the world. So there's a US edition, there's an edition in the UK and Germany, and unfortunately New Zealand was at the kind of bottom of the league table when it came to advertising dollars. We just weren't selling enough advertising. New Zealand's a small market. And so they kind of funded it for 5 years and then it went under. But my last story that I did was about a guy called Tony Quinn, who was an entrepreneur, a guy from Scotland. He made his fortune selling pet food in Australia, of all things, and kind of got that early wave of the pet food market, was one of the first to introduce refrigerated pet food to Australia and made an absolute fortune. He sold his company and he invested $30 million in building a racetrack, a world-class kind of motorsport track in the middle of nowhere in the South Island of New Zealand. So I went, I mean, obviously Red Bull has a big association with motorsport. So I pitched the idea, can I go down and interview this guy and find out what the hell is he doing? Why is he spending this money on a racetrack? And went down to meet him and he absolutely built this world-class racetrack. It really is incredible. The attention to detail, the quality, even it's 10 years old now. I was down there just a month ago and it's just like it's brand new. It's just a stunning place. And the place is absolutely booming. It's turned into a massive tourist destination because he doesn't rely on his revenue from motorsport. What he does is it's a tourist operation. So people can rock up there and jump in a sports car and have a hoon around the track, either by themselves or with a driver. They've got just an incredible setup down there. But I spent the weekend with him trying to figure out, you know, how and why did you end up here? How did you make a fortune from pet food? How did you get into motorsport? Why did you decide to build this racetrack? And at the end of it, he told me that he was trying to write a book about his life. And once I'd finished the magazine article, I sent him an email and I said, listen, I've never written a book before, but I'd love to write your book because it was just so rich. There was so much in it. And thankfully, he said yes. And that one email led to a book deal to write his book. The book went to number one in New Zealand in the nonfiction bestsellers list. And that just opened up a whole lot of doors for me to work with other entrepreneurs. And the thing I realized, Rain, was that entrepreneurs share so much in common with the athletes that I was writing about. You know, they're generally kind of optimistic, goal-oriented, positive,
risk takers,
but with great stories to tell. And so it felt like this natural kind of fit for me. And it was just a really nice kind of move from journalism, which was dying, to an opportunity to work with, you know, similar like-minded people. So it was cool the way it worked out.
It's like what a perfect inherent segue or transition, we'll call it. Like, this is a guy who is, you know, maybe not half entrepreneur, half athlete, maybe it's more like 75-25, but literally the personification of your transition into that world from sports to entrepreneurship. I love that so much. It's like, if it were a person, it was Tony. That's incredible. I see those parallels so much once you started saying that. Let's look at the other perspective. So they all have, you know, good, powerful stories. I totally understand that. In terms of athletes and entrepreneurs, they're similar personas, you know, strong-willed, et cetera, et cetera. On the flip side, on the audience's side, why do people care so much inherently about where people they look up to come from, about their journey. Not they really do. You can see it. It's not just this, their successes. Obviously, they care about that, their titles, their achievements, their exits, whatever it might be. But also, we crave that information, the rags to riches story or whatever, of how they got there. Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah, interesting question. I mean, I think it's that whole notion of change and change over time and seeing somebody evolve, right? And maybe thinking, well, maybe I can evolve too. There's a little bit of that to it, right? You know, if you see somebody, I mean, Tony, for example, made his fortune in pet food, but his journey was incredible. Like, he started out in Scotland, very much rags to riches, grew up in a, you know, wooden caravan in poverty in Scotland, made his first fortune by the time he was 18 or 19, then moved to Australia thinking he was going to take over Australia, and had, you know, again, 8 or 10 years in Australia where he struggled. He ended up doing a lawn mowing round for a while. So it's that kind of arc of kind of, you know, following somebody's kind of journey and following their ups and their downs and their highs and their lows. I think because we're human, we like to hear other human stories. We like to hear about their failures and their successes. Mm-hmm. We like to hear the highs and the lows. And that's one thing I really encourage my clients as well to share, is don't be afraid of sharing the lows as well as the highs, because people love to hear, you know, your failures as well as your successes, right?
Yeah, people are reluctant to share those. But I think, you know, in my mind, as a listener, as a viewer, as an audience member, if I were to hear somebody I look up to, if I were to hear about where they came from and their missteps along the way, and if I were in a similar situation, then it would probably give me inspiration to feel like I can do it too, versus, oh, they're just a natural born talent, I could never do that.
Yeah.
You know, so that might be a part of it. Quick side note. Are all Irish just natural born great storytellers? That's kind of a reputation that precedes them.
It is, yeah. I mean, certainly, I think it's probably not true that all Irish are. You know, there's
depends on the mind they have.
Yeah, that definitely helps. But there's definitely some incredible storytellers. I mean, my friend group growing up, you know, I had some great storytelling friends who were just incredible at spinning yarn. And I mean, I don't consider myself a great storyteller. But some of those stories that I've told you, I worked on them. And I worked them out on LinkedIn, you know, making the connection between the Red Bull athletes and Tony Quinn. That was something that happened as a result of kind of writing it down and thinking it out and telling the story on LinkedIn, I think. Yeah. You know, and that's the thing. I think that's maybe a misconception as well that a lot of people have. They think I'm either a great storyteller or I'm not.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you can learn a few stories that if you work on them, if you write them, if you kind of craft them, that make you seem like a great storyteller. I mean, in social situations, I don't consider myself a great storyteller. My wife will often interrupt my stories and finish them for me because she knows she'll do a better job than I will, right? But I think that's a dangerous misconception to think that, you know, all Irish are great storytellers, or all CEOs have to be great storytellers. It's not something that I think you have to be gifted with, or you don't have to have the gift of the gab. I think if you take the time to reflect on your journey, if you reflect on your career, everybody has, you know, at least 3 or 4 or 5 stories, major turning points in their career, major turning points in their life, that if you reflect on them, and as we said earlier, if you figure out, well, what's the point of this story? Mm-hmm. You know, how does this story highlight a character trait or a value of mine, mm-hmm. or how does it highlight my passion for my industry? And then put those two together. And that's where the power of storytelling comes from actually, you know, yeah, taking the time.
I think this is probably one of the strongest takeaways from today's conversation that I want people to really hear, that it's a skill that you can cultivate, and it's not just some talent, natural born talent. I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I know those people too, that either you're a storyteller or you're not. It's absolutely not true.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What skills do you lean on? What did you have to acquire when you pivoted into the ghostwriting world, where you're like really now helping people tell their stories? You're not a journalist, but now you're, and this is what you continue to do. What skills, like how do you execute that in, you know, milking the best content from them, structuring it in a, you know, strong, cohesive manner when it's not your story? And I know that's kind of a vague, big, broad question, but like, what are the tactics that you take? Okay. And I want to dive into ghostwriting a little bit, because the real question is kind of like, let's just say, like, why does someone need a ghostwriter? They have something to say. They have a life that they've lived, but you come in and you take what that and you mold it into something that you can deliver. Can we get into the nitty gritty of that a little bit?
Yeah, I think really, really important point. Why do you need a ghostwriter? I think there's that notion that you can't read the label from inside the jar, that you're too close to your story, right? That you're too involved. I think I heard that on a Park Howell podcast or some guy called Dove Barron. I don't want to claim credit for that. I think but it's a really interesting point that you can often be too close to your own stories. And they might be stories that you've told your friends for years, and so you kind of devalue them. They might be stories that you're a bit embarrassed about. Again, we talked about the failures and the losses. They may be stories that you've kind of, you know, you don't feel comfortable sharing with the world. What I do, I think, as a ghostwriter is I try and encourage people to take me on a journey of their life. And as they're telling me their story of their life, I'm listening out. I'm listening for the stories that my instinct tells me that's a story you should share. Or tell me more about that particular moment. Tell me more about that particular incident, and drawing it out of them. So it's really identifying, I suppose, using my 20 plus years as a journalist to know, okay, that's our introduction. That's your introduction to your story. That explains so much about you. And I'll give you an example. I worked with a lady a couple of years ago, and she grew up in East Germany. And she told me that growing up in East Germany back in the 70s or the 80s, before the Berlin Wall fell. And she told me that growing up in East Germany was like, you know, growing up in an army boot camp. You know, they went to school 6 days a week from 7 a.m. till 5 p.m. And every day at 10 o'clock, they used to have a break. So the bell would go for a break and all the kids would be, you know, herded out into the schoolyard. And there was a big white circle painted in the middle of the yard. And the kids were forced to basically walk around this circle for 20 minutes. And that was their morning exercise routine. And if anybody stepped off the circle, if anybody stopped walking, you know, the teachers would be positioned around the yard and they'd shout at them to get back in line, to walk the line. And she told me the story and I stopped her and I said, have you ever told that story in a professional setting before? And she said, no, it's just a silly random story from my childhood. And I said to her, no, that sums up what you do for your clients, because she worked as a kind of life coach, a professional development coach. She worked with prisoners actually as well to prepare them for life outside prison and help them to, you know, rehabilitate them. And I said, that story illustrates exactly what you do for people. You help them to step off this treadmill on the road to nowhere. You help them, you know, it's that cliche, you help them to think outside the box or outside the circle in this case. But that story, if you use that story at the start of a presentation or a pitch, and then segue into what you do for clients, I mean, you're just immediately going to grab them, because it just paints this right cinematic picture of what she did and what she had gone through herself and why she was uniquely qualified to do what she did. And I think that's the value of working with a ghostwriter or working with somebody who listens to your stories with a fresh pair of eyes, right? And so the process, you asked me about the process and how I go about getting these stories. I came up with this. It's not a framework, but I kind of, when I'm interviewing somebody, to tell their origin story or even a bigger project like a book, I'm looking for three types of stories. I'm looking for the stories that shaped you and the stories that changed you and the stories that confine you. So that's the stories that shape you and the stories that change you and the stories that confine you. And the stories that shape you are from the formative period of your life, you know, from when you were, you know, your earliest memories up to the age of 18, let's say. You know, it could be about where you're from and how that influenced you. It could be about what your parents did for a living. It could be your first job, what you were obsessed with as a teenager, you know, what sports mm-hmm. you played. It could be any of those things. But there's real gold in those stories, right? And I think finding one or two stories from that period of your life is really, really valuable. The second set of stories is the stories that changed you. And again, we all have kind of maybe two or three or more kind of real turning points in our lives where, you know, we faced a fork in the road. We choose left and we end up somewhere, choose right and we end up somewhere completely different. Mm-hmm. So again, those change moments are, you know, ripe for stories. And then finally, the stories that confine you, these are the stories that keep you small. These are maybe the stories that you're reluctant to share. And again, they don't have to be epic stories, but even if it's a little thing that kind of has kept you small, you know, digging into that a little bit and sharing a little bit of that, it's remarkable how effective that is at connecting with other people, because we all have these stories that confine us. And if you share a story about something that confines you, I guarantee you that there'll be, you know, on LinkedIn, hundreds of other people that will read that story and go, man, I get that. And I mean, I've shared stories, for example, about my fear of public speaking, because like 10 or 15 years ago, I went to Toastmasters because I was terrified of getting up in front of a group of people. I'm still not a natural public speaker. I've done workshops, I've done public speaking, but like a lot of people, terrified by it. But by sharing that story on LinkedIn, it's a story that confined me and kept me small. I talk about how overcoming that fear of public speaking led to so many opportunities in my career, right? Because it led to workshops, it led to public speaking, it led to the opportunity to chat with you on your podcast, right? You know,
absolutely.
So they're the kind of stories that I'm looking for when I chat to people.
The thing is, you are like the walking embodiment of what you help people do. You just said you're not a natural storyteller. You said you have, you know, a fear of public speaking. Yet this is exactly the field that you have fallen into and done quite well with. So that's the testimony to your work right there, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm most comfortable when I'm one-on-one with somebody. I love mm-hmm. that. I love sitting across from somebody. And it's a privilege to get to dig into somebody's life and ask them questions. And you know, you know that, right?
It's an incredible privilege. It's the best. It's the best. Yeah. This is my favorite thing about the show, hands down, is like just this. The execution, the marketing, that's part of it that we have to do. I love to talk to people. That's why I want to dive. I mean, I could talk to you about, you know, the things that you've talked about in your background all day just from that. It's so interesting to me. And because of my background in documentary filmmaking, it's always been interviews for 20 years now. And it wasn't until I got, you know, to this age where I could really look back on that and reflect and be like, man, I get a little piece of all these different people's lives. Like, I'm sitting here writing notes from yours. Like every conversation I have, I get tangible takeaways, even if it's just a life lesson, not a business lesson, but just like a perspective. Because again, we're coming right back to the point we made earlier. Like everybody has a unique experience that has informed and influenced their unique perspective on life. So each person you talk to, you can glean a little something, especially if you know how to talk to them in a way that we do. Yeah, it's everything. This just one-on-one human connection. I love it. I love to hear you say that because I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think people are craving the opportunity to tell their stories as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's really even more so now than ever before. I mean, you have platforms where you can, you know, post what's going on in your head, but I think people really are craving the opportunity to tell stories. I mean, I did a workshop last year, where we got a group of people together in a room. And when I pair people off to do exercises, I love watching kind of strangers. You give them an example of a story, like I just did, for example, of a story that confined me, or I'll give them an example of a story that shaped me and say, right, think about your own childhood, think about growing up, think about a story that shaped you. And just watching the interactions is really, really cool. Because
what are stories if they're not mirrors, right? I mean, that's the point. So you just set it up to, you know, to have them reflect on themselves, and that opens that portal, that opens that door.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. I find myself doing this every episode. I genuinely, this is going to sound so cheesy, so bear with me. I genuinely love what I do so much. And I get to these points where it's just like, I'm like emotional right now, not in like a sad way, but just, I love this stuff so much. To me, human connection is just the epitome of everything, with what we're trying to do with our time here.
Yeah, totally. I'm absolutely with you, and I'm with you as well on the extraneous stuff around what we do, the sales and the marketing. Man, if I could get somebody to take all that off my hands and I could just do this all day, I'm sure you'd be the same. Absolutely love that.
Yeah, I'd rather be around a campfire telling stories with you all night long than anything else, my friend. All right. To that point, here's a topical question. A lot of us in our space, it's kind of, you got two camps, those that are fearful of AI and it taking our creative jobs, and those that are like, here's what you got to know by AI or you'll get, the boat will pass you by. Let's talk a little bit about just the role that in your mind it could play. Like, how would someone trying to share their stories leverage AI? Let's start there.
I'll be honest, I haven't played around with it that much, Rain. I'm a bit old school. Obviously, I write books. I'm a ghostwriter. So, and the projects that I love working most on are the books. The origin story work I do with business leaders is like essentially a slimmed down version of a book. It's a slimmed down version of their life story. So I love those big projects. I love working on books, and I thankfully I don't think AI is quite at the point where you can just get it to write your life story or write it well. Where it is valuable, I think, is coming up with maybe different ideas or different perspectives on maybe a topic that you haven't thought about. I think it's really good for generating maybe different insights that maybe you haven't thought about. For me, though, again, it comes back to the point we made at the start. That's all very well getting those insights, but if you're rehashing something that you've got from AI, how does that make you stand out? How are you going to make it sound different to everybody else who's typed the same prompt into AI? And they talk about prompt engineering and all the rest of it. But essentially, it's trolling through. So, for example, storytelling, it's trawling through everything that's ever been published on storytelling, and it's going to give you essentially the same sound bites that, let's face it, everybody in the storytelling space is rehashing essentially the same kind of sound bites. But if you can package them, if you can remix them, as we said earlier, into a story that illustrates it and brings your point to life, then why wouldn't you? I think you're going to have a much better chance of reaching the audience that you're trying to reach. And obviously this doesn't apply just to storytelling. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. This applies, if you take what is known in your industry, what is best practice in your industry, what you want to, I suppose the message that you want to convey to potential clients, wrap that up in a story, a personal story, you're still going to make your point, but at the same time, it's like a bonus of kind of people getting to know you a little bit. They get to peek behind the job title, if you like. They get a peek at your personality. They get to decide, is this a person that I could work with? Is this a person that I want to work with or not? That whole notion of filtering people in as well as filtering people out, right? If you're in business, you want to work with good people. You want to work with, like-minded people. And telling your story is a great way of kind of just, highlighting, this is me. This is who I stand for. And for me, that is the advantage of telling stories over using AI to create your content for you. Yes, and everybody has said this, use it as a starting point. It's a great play. It's, you know, it's a great little toolkit for, you know, entering, you know, maybe a topic that you have that you want to expand on and have a play with it and see what it turns out. But for me, I would try then personalize it, then add a story element to it. And it'll just make it sing. It'll make it jump off the page.
Absolutely.
Is
the origin story, in your opinion, or your approach with the work that you do, is that the only story that one has to tell, that one should tell, that you help people tell?
That's the one that I focus on. Absolutely, it's not the only story. I think it's a part of your toolkit. For me, it's I think of it as the foundation for all the other stories you tell. If you get clear on your origin story, then it's much easier to tell a value story. It's much easier to go in front of your team and tell them the story about your purpose or your mission in the company, what you're trying to do, what you're all about. It's much easier to tell your why. I mean, Simon Sinek has made a great career out of that, you know, those three circles and one word. Incredible. But it's essentially, if you know your origin story, your why becomes clear. You know, your sales story, you know, all of those stories. Yeah, there's so many different stories you can and should be telling. But I think if you get clear on your origin story initially, it makes everything else so much easier and more straightforward, because you get clarity on who you are. You get clarity on the journey you've been on. You get clarity on the business you started and why you started it in the first place. Right. And that's so valuable. That's a valuable piece of work for you to have, and it's something that evolves and grows with you as well. I think, you know, as you kind of, you know, as your story changes, as you add new chapters to your story, your origin story will naturally kind of evolve and grow with you. But taking the time in the first place, I think, to reflect on the journey, and I think as well, going through the process, you'll find all these stories popping into your head that you maybe haven't thought about for years in terms of, you know, things that have influenced you. And there's so many things that will pop into your
head. That's a really excellent point. Once you start priming the pump, it trains your eye, your ear, your mind, whatever, to spot these opportunities, other opportunities for stories. That's such a great point that people don't realize until you get into it. And that applies to anything, all the organic happy accidents happen once you take the leap and start, which is also in a way bringing us back to, you know, talking about your job at Red Bull, right? If you didn't start, you know, picking away at it, that wouldn't have happened. And similarly, when you start picking away at that story, you start to realize, like, oh, actually that moment that happened in 2013 was a great moment to talk about, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't just pull it out of thin air unless you're working that muscle.
Yeah, there's a couple of really simple exercises as well, if you don't mind me sharing them with you. One is, again, I picked it up from somewhere else. It's the timeline exercise. So it's the timeline of your life where you just draw a straight line from zero up to the age you are now. You might take a few pages to do this, and you're just plotting the highs and lows of the different stages of your life. You might break it into 10-year periods or 7-year periods or whatever it might be, and just write bullet points of kind of the highs and lows of your life, and then reflect on those stories and think, okay, of those bullet points, you know, the highlights and lowlights of my life, which one of those stories could I turn into a business story, into a story that I could use in business? And that's a really good starting point, just to kind of get, you know, out of your head and down onto the page, the potential stories you have. I think you'll be surprised at how many stories you'll find just doing that simple exercise by itself. The other thing that I advise people to do is to, you know, open a document and start pulling those, as I said, like the pop culture influences that you might have, or quotes from books that you admire, or quotes from movies, or books in your industry that are highly influential, you know, sections from those. Start putting all those together into a document as well, and then see if you can kind of bring the two together. As I said, that kind of notion of remixing, you know, take a personal story, take a quote or a piece of industry knowledge, and see if you can tie those two together. That's a really, really good, fun way to kind of play around with your stories and see what comes out of it. And again, that's something you can build up over time. You may be starting from zero, but that's a really, really valuable thing to do to try and help you mine for the gold.
Absolutely. I love this idea of remixing so much. And, you know, back to our point we made earlier about pulling from your other passions, it also, or using some cultural references like this, it also opens more doors to other communities to find your perspective and your work that you do. So if you are making the video about basketball, but it's about leadership, really, like, you're going to get new eyes. I do this sometimes when I come from a filmmaking background. So I just had a video I posted today, I think this morning, that was, the lesson was about your company narrative, but I used a hit TV show to just, like, one episode to showcase it, and it, like, popped off, and I was like, oh, because people like that show. And so it, you know, it caught a bunch of new eyes, and I can talk about that passionately because I love television and film. That's, you know, that's my background. So that's a really good point you made too, is, like, combine all these things that make you. That's how you get the origin story to be so powerful.
Yeah, I'll give you two more examples. I worked with a guy, again, who felt that he had no stories to tell me. And we got chatting, and it turned out this guy had competed in round the world sailing races, right? He competed in the Whitbread. He competed in Sydney to Hobart, like, sailed at an incredibly high level. He worked in the Navy for years, so he had all this kind of sailing and yachting experience. And he ran a leadership consultancy in Australia, and he had never shared, which is a great boating and sailing country. He had never shared that story about his involvement as a sailor and the high level he sailed at. So I helped him craft that story, and it just took off. And he had that story all that time, but just never thought to put it out there, because his leadership on a boat and in sailing, you know, perfectly highlighted why he was so good at what he did for his job as a leadership consultant. Another guy I worked with was involved in sponsorship and bringing companies together to do sponsorship deals. And in the process of helping him talk, you know, figure out his origin story, he told me that growing up in the UK in his early 20s, he worked with a football agent. And this agent looked after David Beckham. And this guy's job was to essentially be David Beckham's, you know, executive assistant. He basically accompanied him on photo shoots, commercial deals. He was his right-hand man. And I said, so you've never shared the story about working with David Beckham before, even though you work in sponsorship. And again, it just hadn't kind of, whether it was just a fear factor, and there is a fear factor. It's not knowing. It's kind of, it's not trusting yourself. You know, is this a short story that I should share or not? There's definitely a fear factor involved in sharing personal stories, because I think we all, your gut is going, no, keep it safe. You know, just post about what you know. Don't go there. But if you can get past that fear,
I always look at it from the unique angle, and, like, you were David Beckham's executive assistant, like one of the most famous, you know, footballers of all time, but also in terms of pop culture and sponsorships and brand deals, like one of the most successful of all time as well, which is still continuing, by the way. That's a gold mine. And then also the sailor, this goes back to the quote about, you can't read the label from inside the jar. Often people think that, like, I sail for a hobby, but that's my world. And they don't think it's special because they love it, but they don't think you would think it's special, where it's like, that's special, right? Because that's not, you can't pull 10 people off the street, or maybe even 100, and have 10% of them understand what it's like to sail around the world, right? That's a very unique thing. You got to leverage that.
Yeah, you got to leverage it. And again, not everybody is going to have worked with David Beckham. Not everybody is going to have been a world-class sailor. But that doesn't mean that you can't draw on stories from your life, you know. They don't all, as I said, all have to be epic stories. There's a whole notion, I'm sure you know, of reframing, right? Where you take a story, you take a piece of your life that you may have looked at one way for years. Just take another look at it. As I said, for me during my last years, those jobs that I worked in that I hated, by reframing them, by looking at them from a different angle, I was like, okay, yeah, they were crappy jobs at the time, but man, I learned so much. And so if you don't have that epic story, you know, reinterpret some other stories from your life and put a business spin on them. And I think you'll be amazed at the amount of connection you get, both, you know, online, obviously, which is where, you know, you can share them, but also in person with your team and with potential clients in presentations and pitches. If you're doing interviews, if you're doing podcasts, knowing and crafting, you know, one or two of these stories, it'll give you so much confidence as well when you're making those kind of speeches, or you're trying to connect with your audience. If you know that you've kind of two or three well-crafted stories, it just makes it so much easier and makes you less likely to ramble, which is what I'm doing now.
No, ramble away, my friend. But that kind of brings us to about the stopping point for today's conversation. But I want to ask you this. Again, I want to talk about like what we do for work so that we can help our listeners. But as we said already, I'm always interested in the person I'm talking to. At this stage in your journey, let's just look at this year. I find people like us, entrepreneurs, people that are working on their business are generally in one of two places. Either they are taking another leap, doing something new, spreading wings, flying, whatever that might be, or really trying to deepen their roots and stay grounded in their foundation of what they are building or have built. Which one are you? No, like, yeah. Where's your focus going into 2024? I know we're at the beginning.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I it's so easy, right, to get distracted by shiny toys, isn't it? So it's so easy to think I should be doing this, or I should do a course, please, or we all know that feeling. Yeah, and I've definitely been guilty of that, I think, over the last few years. But over the Christmas period, over the break, over the holidays, I really decided to double down on the origin stories and the ghostwriting as my two core focuses, because they dovetail and one leads to the other. Like, for example, I worked with a guy, like, as I said, the origin story is a slimmed down version of your life story. If you want to write a book, start with your origin story. Actually start with the origin story and see, am I comfortable with this process? Am I comfortable with, you know, the whole notion of kind of sharing a little bit of myself? Because a book is a big undertaking, right? But the origin story is a slice. It's a slice of your life. It's a distilled version of your life. And so I love that work. But I'm also doubling down. I'm trying to do more ghostwriting work. I worked on three books last year. I worked on the life story of a New Zealand technology entrepreneur, which again, it's just an incredible privilege to, this guy's in his 70s. So he took me right back to growing up in New Zealand in the 1950s and 1960s. So getting an insight into that period, hearing his stories from that period of his life, it's very, very cool. And it's just, for me, the ghostwriting and the books, that's a substantial piece of work. It's not a throwaway tweet. It's not a TikTok video. It's substantial. And I think if I would encourage anything to people listening, you know, aim to put something substantial out in the world, you know.
Plus one, yeah. Plus a thousand to that, my friend. Yes, absolutely. Mm. It's so easy to just do LinkedIn posts and short videos and tweets all day long. I like that advice a lot. And kudos to you for not getting caught in the trap. I immediately related to that picture you were painting.
I've been in the trap. I think I'm trying slowly.
We're getting wiser, my friend. I think that also there will be more and more people wanting to tell their story in those more substantial mediums, right? Now that self-publishing is so big, you know, more and more people are doing that. Whereas maybe in the past, people are like, oh, I couldn't write a book, but now anybody can, if you have your audience, right? And that's what you help them do. So, man, Robert, I appreciate you sharing some time with me today. This has been so fun. I appreciate you very much.
Absolutely loved it, Rain. Thanks for having me on. And it's been a blast. Cheers. Thanks, man.
My name is Rain Bennett. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed that episode, do us a favor and subscribe to the podcast.
If you're already a subscriber and you're enjoying the show, give us a review and let us know the value that you've gotten from it. We love to hear from our listeners and learn about the benefits that they're getting from the show. That's what fuels us and that's what fuels the show. And if you've already subscribed and you've already reviewed it and you think there's someone else that would benefit from listening to this show, please, please share it with them. The more we grow, the more we can help you grow, and that's what we're here to do. Join us next time on the Storytelling Lab. This podcast is a 6 Second Stories production. 6 Second Stories is a story coaching and consulting company that builds online education, in-person and virtual training, and digital products that help businesses master storytelling to find their ideal customers and market to them effectively. You can learn more at 6secondstories.com and purchase the book 6 Second Stories at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or RainBennett.com/6SecondStories.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.